When the first interbreeding took place, the hybrids were half human, half Anunnaki, I think reptilian. And they interbred with this Martian race, this white race that became the race that took over the world, in effect. When a second interbreeding took place, it wasn't between the Anunnaki reptilian race and the humans, it was between the Anunnaki and their hybrid bloodstreams. So now we're going 75% Anunnaki reptilian, 25% human. These bloodlines, what I will call the pure bloodlines, the pure hybrids, these are the ones when you trace into the modern world that turned up as the pharaohs, as the ancient kings of Iran, the so-called serpent kings, that became the aristocracy of Europe, that became the royal families of Europe, and through the great British Empire became the presidents, business leaders, bankers of the United States. The reason that these families of the Eastern establishment of the United States that produce the people that run America and the European aristocracy and royal families, the reason throughout history that they have obsessively interbred with each other and not outside is because they're trying to hold this genetic structure. This is a picture I took of a partial eclipse of the sun on a pyramid at Chichen Itza in the Yucatan, a Maya pyramid. And understanding the two levels of knowledge of the sun from the ancient world to today is to understand much about this manipulation and what's been happening in the world. On one level, the masses obviously focused on the sun because of its heat and warmth and its effects on their lives and their crops and all that stuff. But the few at the top of these pyramids of control, the advanced race or races, if you like, they understood the much bigger nature of the sun. The fact that it is not just a source of heat and light, it is a fantastic generator of magnetic electrical energy, which is affecting life on Earth second by second by second by second. And so, in summary, what you had here was a white Martian race, which its hierarchy had this knowledge, and this Anunnaki reptilian race, and you'd have to see The Biggest Secret for the enormous documentation of that being true, and they also had this knowledge. And below both, you had the mass of the people who didn't have this knowledge of the sun and much else. Tussle took place between these two races, and eventually the reptilian race, through their bloodlines, took control and now control the world. So let's have a look at the nature of this knowledge of the sun. What you're going to see now, sunspots, great arcs of fantastic energy that are emitted from the sun in cycles. Sometimes they're very powerful, sometimes they're less powerful. And the sun is 99% of the mass of the solar system. When it changes, everything changes. And a great example of what I'm talking about and how it affects us and how the ancients knew about this is a guy called Maurice Cottrell. Earlier on in his life, he did a lot of research into sunspot activity, solar flare activity, these projections of energy from the sun, and he found that they could be put into various cycles, small cycles, medium cycles, great cycles over thousands of years. Later on in his life, he came across the Maya information left in Central America, the Yucatan, by the Maya people who picked it up from previous people. And again, you go back eventually to this extraterrestrial race or races, emphasis on the races. And they have put together a symbolic and mathematical structure that talks about cycles of human evolution, small cycles, medium cycles, great cycles. And Cottrell found, to his surprise, that these Maya cycles of human evolution corresponded, even over thousands of years, in remarkable synchronicity with his cycles of sunspot activity, projections of energy from the sun. He also looked at the various historical cycles and found that the rise and the fall of great civilizations like the Roman Empire corresponded to these cycles of sun energy. So when the sun changes, we change. We are encouraged at some points to be open to more aggression or more this or more that. Now, if you know that, and you know that at certain times the mass consciousness is more likely to react in a certain way, then you know, as you're manipulating the world, when to have your wars, when to have your economic collapses. And this is why, as many researchers, not just myself, have established, that these events tend to happen in key years relating to sunspot and sun energy cycles. Therefore, in the ancient world, there was the knowledge of the sun in its true importance and its true effect, And then there was the mass of the people who just looked at it in a totally different way. And this is why in the cultures of the ancient world, you found, again, here a chair from Egypt, a throne from Egypt, a Akhenaten chair, the pharaoh, sun, gold, the solar color, the solar metal. This is why the obsession was with gold. Also, lions, you find a tremendous symbolism of the lion. The lion with its long mane symbolized the sun, which is why it was always there. Here again in Sri Lanka, gold and the sun. Here in Rome, the two lions, the sun and the disc, the sun. Again, understanding this. Now, here, much more recently, this is the sun chair of George Washington, first president of the United States. And the reason that you find the symbols of the ancient world used by this high advanced level of knowledge in the more modern world, right to the present day, among the secret societies and among the countries in terms of flags and symbols, etc., is because the same knowledge stream is used today and the same manipulation is used today as always was. Now, this is a symbol that explains so much about religion and many of the symbols you see in the modern world. Because of the focus on the sun in its various levels of importance and understanding, this symbol was devised in the ancient world to symbolize the passage of the sun through the year. They did the circle with the zodiac coming from a Greek word meaning animal circle appropriately. They broke the circle into four, the seasons, with the cross, and they put the sun on the cross. I've heard that somewhere before. So what they did is to focus their symbolism on this journey of the sun. This is why when you look pre-Christian, pre-Jesus, you find an endless stream of deities in the ancient world who were given birthdays of December the 25th. Why is that? Because around December 21st, 22nd, you have the lowest point in the sun cycle in the year, in the northern hemisphere anyway, which is the winter solstice. And at that point, the ancients said the sun had symbolically died. 3 days later, the sun had demonstrably started its journey back to its peak in the summer. And at that point, December the 25th, they said the sun was born or born again. And because Christianity was created by, in the form we know it, by a sun-worshipping Roman emperor called Constantine the Great, that's why Jesus was given the birthday of December the 25th, symbolic of the sun, which is what Jesus is to a large extent. The evidence that he existed is like almost non-existent, if not non-existent in total. So by Easter, the sun was entering the sign of the ram or the lamb. And so they had ceremonies in which they sacrificed lambs in the pre-Christian world, because they believed that by sacrificing the lamb to the gods, they would have good luck and their sins would be forgiven and all that stuff. Now, this is where the symbolism of Jesus and so many mirrors of Jesus in the pre-Christian world, that's why we constantly get this recurring story of the lamb who died so our sins could be forgiven. Now, what the ancients also did is they symbolized the sun as a baby at the December the 25th time, as a kind of a youth at Easter, and as a strapping, strong, immensely strong man in the height of the summer, and losing his power in the fall, autumn, and then being an old man back towards the winter solstice. And they symbolize the sun as a person with long, golden hair, just like the mane of the lion. And so this is where the Old Testament story of Samson comes from. Samson. And what happened was they had him with long hair, big strapping man, the sun at the peak of the summer. And then what happened in the story, he started to lose his strength. And what happened to make him do that? He had his hair cut. The rays of the sun were getting less and less powerful as he entered the house of Delilah, Virgo the Virgin, which is the astrological sign as you're entering into the fall. And so often, and again in The Biggest Secret, this is documented constantly, this is why you get constant stories which we are asked in the masses to take literally, therefore a prison religion emerges, when in fact they're symbolic, and often symbolic of the sun. So this is what this is, the Celtic cross. It's the circle and the cross. It's the symbol I've just had on the screen. This is NATO. NATO is a wholly owned subsidiary of this brotherhood, this group of bloodlines, the reptile human bloodlines, the hybrids that run the planet. Again, this is the CIA symbol. Again, there's the cross with the sun on the cross. And this sun symbolism is something that you can read this brotherhood by. I came across this shot or this symbol in the City of London. Now, we'll get to this. The City of London is the operational epicenter of this global web of manipulation. And this is across the road from St. Paul's Cathedral. And again, you see the same symbolism. And on the center, you've got the black sun. Now, the black sun symbolizes two things. It symbolizes the negative use of solar energy, and it also symbolizes something that's becoming more and more obvious, and people are becoming more aware of, and that's that it's not just the planets that go around the sun in the solar system. The solar system is also traveling around a central point, and that central point is known symbolically as the black sun, kind of a galactic center, and it takes 26,000 years for the solar system to go around that sun, and we are now in the process of completing one of those 26,000-year cycles, which is why the world is changing and is going to change dramatically in the next 15 years to 2012. So again, this symbol keeps coming up in the modern world as well as the ancient one. Now, even in the design of cities, which this brotherhood has in the modern world controlled, you see exactly the same symbol. What you're looking at here is the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. Paris, like Washington and London, is a mass of esoteric symbolism and sacred geometry built by design into the street plan. And so what you have is the Arc de Triomphe with the circle around it. There's the center of the sun on the cross, if you like. And going off from there are 12 roads, breaking up into the 12 segments, just like that symbol I showed you a few minutes ago. And this, again, is sun symbolism from the ancient world carried by this group. And even in the road, on the road plan around the Arc de Triomphe, you see the sun there making the point. But if you don't realize where all this is coming from, it just seems like kind of nice design. Again, up there, Order of the Knights Templar and the York Rite of Freemasonry. That symbol there with the cross and the crown is the way the symbol of the circle and the cross has been got into Christian churches without people realizing what it means. It's the same symbol, the cross and the circle. And again, you see the same symbol here. This is the famous painting by Leonardo da Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci was a very high initiate. In fact, he was the grand master of a elite secret society, still very much part of the manipulation today, called the Priory of Sion, S-I-O-N. And Sion comes from a Sanskrit word meaning the sun. The Priory of the Sun is what it's actually saying. And this guy was an initiate who knew the underground story and the underground knowledge. This is why Da Vinci was able to make predictions and draw pictures of various technologies that were well ahead of his time. Now, what he's done here is present the Last Supper picture in the form of symbolizing that same symbol, the cross and the sun on the middle and the circle. He's depicted Jesus as the sun, hence the halo around his head there, and he's broken up the disciples into four sets of three, symbolizing the three-month periods of the seasons and the sun going through them. This is why this constant recurring number of 12 and 1, the hero and the 12 followers, constantly reoccurs. This is why you have King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, the circle of the zodiac. This is why again and again, the big religious heroes had 12 followers, the sun and the months and the areas of the zodiac. This is an ancient stone depiction of the Phoenician and many other cultures within the Middle Near East, but certainly the Phoenician sun god called Bel or Bil, who became the Canaanite Baal. And there you see the halo around the top of his head symbolizing the sun. And this is vastly ahead of the emergence of Christianity, which then used the halo because the same symbolism was used because again, is Zoroaster depicted with the halo and the rays around his head, because these guys did not actually exist. They were symbols of the sun. That level of knowledge knows that. This level of knowledge, the masses, takes the symbolic literal, and you have a prison religion. So let's pick up how this all unfolded from here. Just to quickly summarize. In that area of what we now call Iran, Turkey, and the Caucasus Mountains, you had two advanced races at the same time. You had the Martian race, which came down and survived there and came out of there after the cataclysm involving Venus 7,000 years ago or so. But you also had another race, which the Sumerian text called the Anunnaki, a reptilian race. And they interbred in this program or programs that are described in the Sumerian texts. And interestingly, they describe how this Anunnaki did this interbreeding by using what we would call test tube methods. Now, of course, when these tablets were found in 1850, the idea of creating life in test tubes, utterly ludicrous, no longer. And so you had the interbreeding between the white race, the Martian race, and the Anunnaki. And the outcome of that was what appeared to be a human form, is what we'll call it today, but within that white race were particular bloodlines that were very, very reptilian. And again, you have to look in detail in The Biggest Secret to see the enormous documentation of this, but it's these bloodlines, this particularly the white reptilian, the Anunnaki Martian bloodlines that actually have run the world ever since. Demonstrably, the white race took the world over. They came out of the Caucasus Mountains and this area of the world in two basic ways. Go one way first, by land. They came out of the Caucasus Mountains. And incidentally, what do Americans call white people? Caucasian. Why do they call them after some mountains in the Near East? Because that's where the white race came from. They came across land into Europe and they changed their names. They were the Scythians, they were the Sumerians, they were many different names. And if you follow the movement of people, you find that they became the white race of Europe. They became the Anglo-Saxon race because the Angles and the Saxons were simply different names for the same race. They became the Scandinavian peoples. They became the British. They became the French. They became the European white race. And within this white race were these Anunnaki bloodlines, these reptilian bloodlines. And these were the ones, when you do the research and the genealogy, that ended up again and again and again in the positions of power. Political, royal, economic, all of it. And so, not only did they come across land in that way, much earlier, around 3000 BC, through a white race called the Phoenicians, they went by sea to Britain. And what we call the British culture, which of course has had such an effect on passing on that culture to the rest of the world, is actually the Phoenician culture. It comes from the Near East. And the proof of that is endless in the artifacts and the legends and the stories that have been left. For instance, what you see there in that depiction on the coin, a ancient coin, is a Phoenician goddess called Barati. And on the other side, you see the classic depiction by the British of their goddess, Britannia. And they are the same, because Britannia was Barati. The Phoenicians worshipped two deities. One was the male, Barat. One was the female, Barati. And she became Britannia, and Barat and Barati became Britain and the British. The British culture is, in effect, the Phoenician culture. Not only that, when you look at the names given to the goddesses and what have you, in the Indus Valley, what we call the Hindu culture, they are the same. They are very, very close to the name Barat and Barati, because this white race, as I said earlier, also went in and created the Indus Valley Hindu culture. No accident that all the major religions in the world that imprisoned us came out of this same area of the Middle and Near East. In Britain are white horses scored into the hillside. This is the supposed to be the oldest one. It's a place called Uffington in Wiltshire. And it's been dated to around 3000 BC. That is precisely the time the Phoenicians arrived by sea into Britain, bringing the Bharati, British culture as it became. Now, why would the Phoenicians score horses in the hillsides, the chalk hillsides of Britain? Very simple. The Phoenicians were sun worshippers. This was a Phoenician symbol of the sun. This is a Phoenician high priestess. Again, you see the swastika. The swastika was a Phoenician symbol of the sun. Quite a positive symbol. And what the Nazis did, because they understood this, is they turned it round to indicate the negative, because they understood the nature of the sun as well. This is a Phoenician stone found in Britain. There again, you see the swastika. And what we call the British culture came from the Near East. Another thing that these